Jane Hamilton is our guest for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We don't talk to many fiction authors, but could not pass up the chance to visit with Jane Hamilton on her way to an appearance tonight in Ashland. The Chautauqua Poets and Writers bring notable writers to Ashland from time to time. Jane Hamilton speaks tonight at 7:30 at the Ashland High School Mountain Avenue Theater. She lives and writes in an orchard farmhouse in Wisconsin. Her first novel, The Book of Ruth, won an award for first fiction and was an Oprah Book Club selection a few years later. Map of the World was made into a movie. Jane Hamilton, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you here.
Thank you, and I'm so glad to know about the snow because as I was taking a shower this morning, I thought, oh, I can't. I have to turn the water off. Can only have it running for 2 seconds.
It's really been a strange winter in the sense that north of the state line, things have been kind of okay. There's actually enough precipitation, but it's all falling as rain instead of as snow. At the state line, it seems like things stopped dead, whereas the ski area just north of the state line at Mount Ashland had 38 days to open this winter. Mount Shasta Ski Park had none. Zero. So it's just it's a huge difference on either side of the state line. But you're right, water conservation is always a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So, what got you writing in the very first place?
What got me writing in the very first place? All right. I will tell you that my grandmother wrote novels, and when she was 65, she got rid of her house. She moved into a retirement community, and she wrote novels, and I have them, and they are terrible.
So they weren't published, you're saying?
They weren't published, no. And my mother, though... is a poet and a journalist also, and she's 94 now. But when I was born, I was the fifth child, and she wrote this poem called "A Song for the Fifth Child," and it was published in the Ladies' Home Journal, and it later became a needlepoint kit, and it has its own Facebook page.
Really?
And it's kind of like a camp song. It's gone into the greater communal knowledge base. And it's so she wrote that and it was published. And I was always aware that my mother had written a poem that was about me. And also, I grew up in a house of books. And we didn't really have a TV until I was 11 or 12. So really grew up in a book culture. And so I just sort of thought that if you were a girl child, you were supposed to grow up to be a writer. And so I did, you know, I wrote. And I also had four older siblings who were very, very funny. And there was one point when I was about 11 and I made a joke at the dinner table. And it wasn't a successful joke.
Oh.
And my mother said later, "Pookie, you leave being funny to the others. Your job is to be sweet and nice."
But what pressure?
That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. But I kind of... So I wrote for my own amusement and my own... really trying to... stake out territory sounds too kind of military. But just to sort of develop a self and in that privacy. And writing is a wonderful way for any young person to do that. And it's... I'm always sort of amazed when, teenagers say, well, I'm a writer, or their mothers say, oh, little Emily is a writer. And I just think, keep it private, be underground with it, because then it has a kind of a power.
So do you learn a lot about yourself in that process then? I have to believe that particularly at a younger age, you're putting things on paper and going, wow, where did that come from?
There's that aspect of it to it, and it's also just developing, you know, a voice and learning what it is that you think. I think the subconscious is the smartest part of us, and, you know, when you put things down and then you let it radiate back to you, you think, oh, yeah, my goodness, or what does that mean, or what is wrong with me?
The putting things down, the sense of taking the foot off the gas pedal, putting it away for a while, just letting things lie and... Mm-hmm. And almost like bread rise by themselves.
That's so true.
All right, so I guess books about happy, well-adjusted people make for boring reads, but but you do put your characters through ringers, don't you?
I have done. That's true.
Uh-huh.
That's true. I guess probably most severely in A Map of the World, where a child drowns and.
And the woman who was responsible for watching the child goes through all kinds of hell.
Yes, she has to go to a prison. I wrote 4 distinct novels in getting to the final novel. And I had the first chapter all along. I knew that this child drowned and that Alice Goodwin was responsible for the death of her neighbor's child. But I didn't know how to get her out of that trouble. And it took me years to figure out that she had to get into deeper trouble to then come out of her original trouble. And I really did. I mean, the first novel, she goes to a Sufi community in upstate New York. In the second novel, she goes to visit her husband's aunt. In the third novel, she stays home and goes and is with her father, who's an alcoholic. I don't live with alcoholics. I know nothing. I'm not interested in alcoholism. And it just took a long time to figure out what the plot was. And then, you know, sort of once you get into that current, the thing kind of wrote itself. But it was tough, I have to say. But I was devoted to that first chapter and that trouble. I was devoted to her and getting her out of that trouble.
So the first chapter was the same. That stayed the same.
Pretty much.
But the other 4 versions of it.
Yes. Yeah. I have like stacks of manuscripts and garbage bags in the basement in my house.
I want to ask about the collection in the basement. We have much more to talk about with Jane Hamilton in town to talk to the Chautauqua Poets and Writers in Ashland. 7:30 tonight at the Mountain Avenue Theater at Ashland High School. We'll come back and talk more with her here. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange by phone or email. We'll give the number and the email address again after the break. Back with Jane Hamilton and you in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jane Hamilton, an author several times over. 6 different novels?
I think so.
And not counting the ones that are apparently in garbage bags in the basement, which we'll get to in a moment. She has written A Map of the World, The Book of Ruth, and several other books. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Jane. She'll be appearing in Ashland tonight at 7:30 at Ashland High School, brought to town by Chautauqua Poets and Writers. Join her here now at 800-838-3760 around the region, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. I never thought about that part. You ask somebody, how many books have you written? And the answer for how many you've written versus how many have actually been published to the world, it can be a very different set of figures.
400 million. I've written 400 million. I have a friend who's a very successful and wonderful writer, and she writes, you know, a whole series of detective novels, and she outlines a 700-page book. She has maybe a 400-page outline because she has to, you know, it's so complex. And so anyway, I'd written a failed novel somewhat recently, and then I wrote another failed one, and I said, yeah, no, I had to put it away. And she said, again? As if, didn't you figure out? You know, but it's you know, what I write is so-called literary fiction, whatever that means. But, you know, it's character-driven, and you can't know what you've made until you've made it. You can't know if it's going to work until you have actually given it a whirl. So sometimes it doesn't work.
It sounds like you get to the end of the process and become the reader and realize, I wouldn't want to read this garbage.
That's very well said. Yes, that's true. I also have the good luck to, I live with a farmer, and he's a wonderful reader. And I often get to the point in my work where I'll read it out loud to him, and he's a very good listener. But I can tell by his posture as he slumps in the sofa lower that, you know, it's not working.
Uh-huh. He starts to tune out and look out the window and like, hey, is it time to do the wheat combine? Like, yeah, it just tunes away. Wow.
Yeah. So it's a little harrowing, but it's very good.
The process.
The process, yes. And when it works and he laughs in the right places and he sheds a tear, and it's kind of like, it really is sort of emptying my brain pan into his brain pan. And I wish he could do the same for me. I would love to roam inside his brain.
Uh-huh. Are you sure?
No.
So you mentioned, 400 million novels you've written and published six altogether. How do you keep track of the different versions, though, and decide, okay, I mean, do you print them all out? First of all, the process. I'm assuming you write on computer. Most people do now.
Yes,
but yeah, okay.
Certainly. Absolutely.
But it sounds like you print a lot of stuff, too.
I print. I always print. I came up in the early days of the Macintosh where the screen could freeze and everything was gone. Mm. That doesn't happen so much anymore. But anyway, so I print and I retype. And how do I keep track? Well, I don't really. And every now and then I'll come across a garbage bag and open it up and look and think, oh, I completely forgot about that. But the things that are true and real and need to remain with you.
In other words, they're still inside your body, inside
yeah.
your mind. You can pull them
body.
Out again and use
it's
them.
True.
Is there a filing system to the garbage bags in the basement? I mean, do you know that this is project, Z,
no,
this is project X?
Not really. And I went to Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, and not so long ago the archivist contacted me and wondered if I would like to give my papers to Carleton College, which I would be happy to do, but they don't know what they have asked for. And, I mean, there's just no archivist or even student wants to look through every draft and say, oh, she put a semicolon there. Oh, she eliminated the word bright. I mean, so I'm going to have to figure out. I mean, my impulse really is just to burn it all because, who cares? But I don't know. Or if I could sift out and say, okay, this was first, this is middle, this is late, maybe they'd want like a few examples. But
like
there's
grab
just
a box at random from the middle of the
yeah.
middle period.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. If I could even figure out which was the middle.
Huh. Jane Hamilton's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We have a phone call for you. Let's go to Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Jane, I was in the position of your partner. I had a partner who was a world class poet. And she would read me her poetry as she was working on it. And all I can tell you is that man has incredible moral courage.
What makes you say that?
Well, when someone says, what do you think about this, starts reading it, and it's drivel, it's as bad as the deer in the headlights look. How does this outfit look, honey?
Yeah, how does my rear end look in this dress, that kind of thing?
I'm not going to say that, but the long and the short of it is it's the same process. And, of course, the person is incredibly involved in what they're doing and generally proud of it. And we had the kind of relationship where I could be absolutely honest and say, well, that's wonderful or that's drivel, But it is. It's tremendous. You bake him a cake.
I do, and I will. Thank you. But, the other thing is, though, that I think at a deep level, the writer often knows that it's drivel. And I have to say that the times that I have, that where my husband has just said no, I feel that. It corroborates something that I know.
You tried to keep a poker face when you hand something to him or read it out loud and say, here, honey, I have something great, or just you give it all the same kind of hype and then knowing
I mean, it is true that in the moment you think, maybe I can get away with this. That's really what it's about. Can I pull the wool over his eyes? But you're right. It would be, it's a tough position to be in. And I've been a teacher too, and so I also have been in that position. And I do know that it's really better to be as honest as you possibly can, while at the same time, delivering the news with as much kindness as you can too. But sometimes you do just have to say, no, you are not allowed to do that. And, I have to say another thing about, there's a lot of stuff, chatter on the web about the gatekeepers in New York and how terrible and how blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about, the publisher. But I have always been very, very grateful for my gatekeepers because they truly have saved me from myself. And I just have had a period where I have written a couple of failures, and it's been very painful to have the agent and the editor just say, we can't let you do this, basically. And yet, I'm so glad that they have done that.
A sense of saving you from yourself.
Absolutely.
So I was going to ask you about the process of figuring out that they're failures. Now, some of them you decide this by yourself and say, I'm not even going to deliver this to the editor, the publisher, whatever, right? And then some, apparently, they let you know.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, it takes a very long time to understand if a thing works, to really listen to it. In my process, I read the work out loud to myself. I read it into my iPad. I listen to it in the car, and it's as if somebody else is reading a book to me, and I can hear it. And then I put it away and come back to it. So there's a lot of pressure now and a wish for immediate gratification, and but it's always wrong to rush the work, and I think that's what I was doing. I succumbed to just the feeling, you know, I've got to get another one out. And
I wondered how intense that pressure is, particularly when you come out with a book that gets recognized. Was a Penn Hemingway Award, was it, for the Book of Ruth? Yeah.
Well, I did feel pressured, and then a certain amount of time passed, and then I realized that I was out of the race and that it wasn't really a race. And so, you know, for me, the real deep pleasure is very private, and just the privilege of being able to do the work. I mean, I know that sounds prissy and Pollyanna-ish, but it's really true. And this last thing that I have a book coming out next May, and I just finished it. And the joy of being able to spend time in Mary Frances Lombard's head, my heroine, surpasses anything else that will occur in this process. And so I got to be with her. What else could I really wish for?
Jane Hamilton's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is an author several times over. She is known for The Book of Ruth and Map of the World and A Short History of a Prince. Let's go through the whole list. Disobedience, When Madeline Was Young, and Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, and, of course, another book coming out next year, you heard. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Jane will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Ashland High School Mountain Avenue Theater, brought here by Chautauqua Poets and Writers. You can join us now, though, at 800-838-3760 around the region, or by email jx@jeffnet.org, or check out our Facebook page and see Jane's picture from our studio from just a few moments ago. So let's talk about getting inside the head of Mary Frances Lombard. What's the fun there?
Well, this book started because I was in New York and I bumped into my agent and at the Lexington Street Fair, and I hadn't seen her in a while because I really didn't have anything to report, and she asked me what I was working on, and I told her, and she said, that sounds like a terrible idea. She said, I don't know why you don't write about that farm where you live in Wisconsin. And I said, well, I can't. I have to wait for the relatives to die. And she said, well, you'll be dead too. So, needless to say, that stayed with me. But you know, how do you organize the material that is of your life and also make it up and bring a fictional aspect to it? It is really good material. I live on a family farm, my husband's family, and it's rich and complex and wonderful and. And I can't use it, but I must use it. It's my material. So, you know, so I created Mary Frances Lombard, who's a girl, and she's watching this whole family dynamic occur. And you know, for me, my agent has always said, you should just write a memoir. I'm not interested in trying to render the truth. I mean, the fun is mixing it up and bringing certain features into it that give the storiness a heft that isn't present maybe in real life. And also you can more easily hide behind the scrim of fiction.
Quote fingers for fiction.
Yeah, quote okay. Fiction. So Mary Frances grew out of my own life situation, but the book is fiction.
I happen to run across a couple of those comments, which can be blindingly, brilliantly adoringly wonderful on the internet, or they can be profanely awful.
Uh-huh.
But one of them was from somebody who claimed that they knew you growing up and knew exactly who you based the characters in a certain book on. I
mean, really?
Mm-hmm. So that's my brother or something like, you know, one of those deals.
Well, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing because sometimes it's true that you do steal unabashedly from life, but the reactions can vary. Either people don't see themselves, or people see themselves and you haven't thought of them in forever. So it seems almost like an insult to say, Ricky, I haven't thought of you in 30 years. So you're kind of screwed either way. But I guess the short history of a prince in a certain way is maybe my most, you know, autobiographical book, because it takes place in an Oak Park-like place. I studied ballet. Walter McLeod, my hero, studied ballet. We both have the wrong body type, and yet we're passionately devoted to the dance. So having that kind of deep longing to do a thing and the tools not to do it is a kind of unrequited love. Then there's high school in the mix. So, and, you know, I had a rich high school experience. Everybody does, I think.
A rich high school experience.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a good high school experience, but certainly rich with experiences. Or did you mean good, too?
Good, too, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in terms of characters and where they go, and one of the first questions I wrote here was how much the book writes itself. And I think you already said in some cases it really does. It just kind of takes off without you.
Sometimes it wonderfully writes itself, but you pay later for one that doesn't. My last book, Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, I was teaching writing on a cruise ship, and I had some wonderful students, but I also had students who seemed not to understand that we live in a print culture, and they had never read a book, but they really wanted to be a writer. And so I wanted to explore that gap, and I wanted to understand who that person is who so desperately, passionately wants to be a writer but has never read a book. And so I wrote a novel about a woman who wants to write a romance novel, but she's never been a reader. And I sort of have forgotten your question, but
about books writing themselves.
Yeah, books. Oh, that book wrote itself, and it amused me so much, and I loved writing it so much, but it happened so quickly that I sort of wasn't present for it. And afterwards, I wished that I could write it again because I didn't know it was going to be over so quickly. It was just it was as if it came out of my mouth in one continuous breath.
Mozart style. It was all just right on the paper.
Yes,
before you
that's what I meant to say. It was Mozart style.
Jane Hamilton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the Book of Ruth, Map of the World, Laura Ryder's Masterpiece, and several other works, too. What you do to the characters, though, I mean, again, you know, happy, well-adjusted people don't make for good novels, probably. Are there ever moments, though, when you think, for example, like, Ruth, I'm sorry, but it just makes a better story this way?
No, I don't really think about their well-being in those terms. But I wrote my book when Madeline was young. I really set out to write a book about a happy marriage, a book where the couple is devoted. You know, I'd sort of, Jonathan Franz and I feel in The Corrections had written the ultimate novel about family dysfunction. You know, that was done. And I thought, well, what goes on in what looks like a happy marriage and what feels to the characters like a happy marriage? So so that presented itself as a challenge. And, you know, we don't think about devotion and marriage so much anymore. But I think those characters in that book were not only devoted to each other, but they were also devoted to the devotion, which is one way to get through marriage, to be devoted to the devotion. So, you know, I enjoyed being with that family. They had certain other quirks, to be sure, I guess I don't worry about punishing them too much. I do love them.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Yeah, you have to. You really have to, don't you? Even the ones who have dark souls and do mean things to people.
It's true. It's true.
And so the process of deciding, actually the process of writing itself, is, when you look at, well, you know, gee, she's got, you know, 6 books, you know, over how many years now? But the fact is, you're always writing, it sounds like. There's not like a long break between bits of stints of writing?
No, I'm always writing, but I think the thing that happens is that while you're writing the thing at hand, the next thing is percolating. There's a kind of an urgency to finish with the thing at hand, to enjoy it and to get it right. But you know, when you conceive of a book, it's this beautiful vision just slightly out of reach. Although if in the moment you could sit down and write it right then, and then you would be able to realize that vision. But of course you can't, because you can't. There's dinner to make and sleep to be had and life to be led. And so then once you start writing, the vision is compromised, sadly. And then the next beautiful vision is there. And so it's just, you're sort of not really monogamous.
We'll explore that a little further. Jane Hamilton's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, author published several times over in Ashland for an appearance tonight at Ashland High School. We'll come back and talk more with Jane and take more of your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jane Hamilton, the author. Her first novel, The Book of Ruth, won an award for first fiction, was an Oprah Book Club selection. Map of the World was made into a movie. There are 4 other novels and 1 more on the way. And she thinks about $400 million in her basement in Wisconsin. Jane Hamilton appears tonight at Ashland High School's Mountain Avenue Theater at 7:30, brought in by Chautauqua Poets and Writers. You can join us here and now on The Exchange at 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org, which Shoshana and Ashlyn did. She says, I work with novelists and would like to know, what is your best advice to new novelists?
Well, I think, as I said before, I don't know if you were listening, but the you know, the mystery and the magic and the fright factor of writing a novel is that you, or even a story, is that you have to write it before you know what it is and what's there. And so that's an important thing, to really listen hard to your own work and let it radiate up to you. But of course, you know, reading a great deal and being an observer of the world. For example, I'm in this radio station studio right now talking to Jeffrey, and he's got a John Deere dump truck little model thing right by his phone, which is curious, and we could discuss his personality in relation to that, which, you know, if we have time later. All of those things, taking time, reading, having one or two people who you trust to share your work with. You know, you don't need a whole workshop full to do that, but so those are some of the things that I would suggest. And, you know, just not hurrying, and also really taking pleasure in your own sentences, reading the work out loud to yourself. And, I mean, if you don't have pleasure in the work, probably nobody else is going to. So I think that's what I can tell you. But there's no formula. I've taught in MFA programs and here and there. And sometimes I think that the students are under the impression that this is pipe fitting. You know, if you just tell me how to do it, just tell me the rules.
I'll put the parts together.
Yeah, I had a student once said, I want to learn to write plot, you know, teach me to write plot. And I thought, I mean, I didn't say to him, but I wanted to. I could not tell you to write. I don't know how. And I've read a lot of how-to books. And you can read all the how-to books and know all the rules and then sit down and not have a clue about what to do. But the main thing is to let the story come through you, and you know, to tell the story at hand.
I think you've given a lot of would-be writers a huge bit of relief just now, because they're also agonizing. How do I get the plot to work this way? And the fact is, it sounds like you're right. You get a good idea for a story, and you tell a good story.
You tell a good story, and we're you know, we all are storytellers. you know, well, I mean, there's in poetry and in short fiction, you know, those forms work through images. So you have to have the powers to distill your experience. And I think writing a good short story is almost as difficult as writing a so-so poem. You know, those forms are very, very difficult. But I also think, you know, just it's play. That's what it is. It really is play. We're so lucky to get to do it.
You talked about the beautiful vision, you know, the thing you have to put down because, you know, there are meals to cook and sleep to be had and stuff like that. But does it ever get to the point where as a writer you are experiencing a page turner from the delivery end in the sense that you don't want to stop?
Well, I have to say there's times when I really love the work. And that comes in cycles. There's the love, and then there's, oh, this is terrible. And even, you know, just having finished a book and handed it in and it's pretty much done, I love it. And I know that in about 6 months, I'm going to be filled with shame. It's just part of the cycle. Because, you know, even if it's not autobiographical, you are writing your own experience of feeling. And that is very private, and you are exposed, and especially now in the interweb and all the terrible things that people say, no matter what, you know, you just, so that's, but I have, you know, I've done this enough so that I understand the cycle. And then years passed. Recently, I had to reread The Short History of a Prince, and I hadn't read it in years, and I don't go back and look, but there was a book club thing, and I thought I better remember what the book was about. And I was sitting in a restaurant, and I was reading it, and I'd forgotten that it was pretty funny. I was laughing out loud, and I really felt like I was reading something that was divorced from myself, and the waitress said, "You must be reading a really funny book." And I said, "I am."
And you left it at that. Further explanation. I hadn't thought about it in that way. I mean, the fact is, you know, whether the book is as far from you as is possible for you to get a character, the fact is it's still your own guts that are producing this.
It's true.
And they're exposed there for the world to stomp on in some cases, as you pointed out with the internet. So, which raises the question of criticism because, you know, for example, you know, you get the Penn Hemingway Award for The Book of Ruth. And then Publishers Weekly, it looked like, gave it a pretty good slap upside the head right out of the box. And so, you know, you have prestigious organizations that differ on what they think of the work. And I wonder, first of all, how you sort of regulate the inflow of that, particularly in the age of the internet now, which was not as prevalent when The Book of Ruth came out.
It didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Well, I've always enjoyed being reviewed by people that I respect. Carol Shields, the writer who's now dead.
Unless, was that her book, Carol Shields?
Yes, she wrote Unless.
I love that book.
And she actually also grew up in Oak Park, Illinois. But anyway, she wrote a review of A Map of the World in Somewhere or Other, and it was not entirely positive, but it was so thoughtful. And it was, you know, and I learned something from reading it. So that kind of review is really wonderful. I don't read the internet. I don't go to Goodreads. It's really painful. It's very searing. And with Laura Ryder, you know, Laura Ryder is a satire, and I think people who didn't get that just trashed it. And, you know, I just wanted to write, "It's supposed to be funny." anyway, but, you know, if you believe the good reviews, you have to believe the bad reviews. And I think as I get older, I'm less inclined to read them at all. So we'll see. I mean, it's always, of course, you want a good review because that does make people go to the bookstore and get the book. And readers are lovely. But I don't know. It's a little bit soul destroying.
I can well imagine. Yes, the criticism.
And the book is done. You can't fix it.
Right. Right. It's true. It's like, well, what can I say? Stepped in that hole in your mind. The way I wrote this question in the first place was, what's the feeling to have one successful novel when you begin the work on a second? But for you, this could have been like number 6, number 19, or something. by the time the Book of Ruth was out there and gaining plaudits.
Well, the interesting thing about this thing that we do is that nothing that you just did really prepares you for the next thing, and that each book presents a different challenge. So, you know, I've always felt that I'm a beginner. But I have to say, you know, the Book of Ruth, I just assumed it would be dead on arrival because that was the experience of friends that I had. And I was happy to have done it. And, you know, I got $6,000 or whatever. And that seemed like a lot of money at the time. So it was all good. And then my mother's friends said things like, well, it'll be really hard to top that one. And that was meant to be a compliment, but it was, you know, instantly undermining.
Right. Right. Sure.
Oh, you're right. I probably can't.
There's no way I could be that good again. Yeah.
But each one is interesting and has to find, each story has to find its own form.
Some of the characterizations, like the little girl in Disobedience, who's obsessed with the Civil War and
yes,
reenactments and authenticity. How'd you get to her?
Well, I read this book by Tony Horowitz called Confederates in the Attic, which was about Civil War reenactment. And it's a really great book. And then, coincidentally, I had a cousin whose daughter became very intensely involved in Civil War reenactments. And Elvira might be somebody who is pretty closely aligned with a real person. In this life of ours, which I felt bad about because, you know, this girl was a real girl. But how could you pass up an 8-year-old who gets out of the car at the lake and I say, how are you? And she says, I am so mad at General George B. McClellan. Because at the Battle of him, and I just think, oh, sometimes, you know, sometimes things are given unto a writer and they are a gift. And she felt to me like a gift. And I changed her. And my cousin did forgive me. And I think it's all good now. But I mean, I love Elvira. And people have said to me, I wish that she had written the book. Why couldn't she have been the narrator? But she's too strong. She needs somebody to observe her, is what I feel about that character.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the observing part, because that is, and you mentioned the dump truck, and I can explain that too. But that's the thing that I have noticed talking to writers of fiction, of poetry. They are people who see things around. They're not the people going to come into the room tap dancing. They're going to be the ones who are going to look things over and notice things that a lot of other people would not have noticed.
That is true. I was just driving into the South with the great poet from Purdue University, Marianne Baruch. She is a wonderful, wonderful poet. And, of course, we were driving through the South, so we stopped at the Waffle House.
Of course.
We don't have those in Wisconsin, and I live for grits. So we're sitting having our grits, and we're talking. And our waitress was this wonderful, blousy, large, big-haired older woman who, you know, she was a Southern. She just this honeyed tongue and talking. And there was another waitress sitting at the counter, and she was having her breakfast. And at a certain point, Marianne Bruce said, hey, I see on the menu here that you can ask for the fuller menu. And the waitress at the counter turned to us and she said, we don't give that one out. That's like the secret menu. No, we don't. And so we had a little repartee about the secret menu. And then when we were leaving, Marianne says to the woman at the waitress at the counter, she says, I can tell you're a writer. And the woman said, well, I am a writer, but you know, I feel like you got to be sitting on the beach and the surf has to come up. And Marianne Bruch, in a different, more powerful way, said to her, that's ridiculous. She used a swear word. But anyway, and the woman said, I know it. And then we left the restaurant and I said, Marianne, how in the entire Waffle House of 50 persons having their grits did you identify the writer? And she said, I could just tell she had a secret life. And I said, but our waitress was so verbally adept. I mean, basically, she was singing to us in her Waffle House-ese. And she said, but all of that was in service to being a great waitress. And the other waitress really was, she was listening to every word we said. She was, you could just tell. And I thought, well, I missed that one. Mm-hmm. Leave it to the poet.
Sure. The poet to be observing the really finer points and details and all that stuff. Oh, that's wonderful. The story of the John Deere dump truck on the table in the studio at the Jefferson Exchange. We bought a box about 5 years ago that allows us to work on a 10-second delay. So in case somebody drops an F-bomb.
Which I was just about to do.
Which you were just about to do. We have a button we can hit that makes the last 4 seconds disappear magically.
Oh my goodness.
Seamlessly. But the button says dump on it. And the first time we needed to use it, because somebody dropped an S-bomb, as it turned out, I was motioning to the student assistant at the time, a guy by the name of Noah Jacobs, and I couldn't remember the word. It was like, and nothing came out. And so the opportunity passed, and so the S-bomb got on the air. Because so when Noah went home for Christmas break a few weeks later, he brought back this John Deere dump truck. For me. So even if I couldn't remember what it said on the button, I could hold up the dump truck as a signal to hit the dump button.
That is really good. I'm so glad we discussed this.
Me too. You're the first person to ever ask him. I mean, a few people have remarked. I was like, oh, like I got a dump truck. Yeah, I do. But
that's a good story.
It's one of my favorites. And Noah's in his own fun drive. We're going to be in ours pretty soon, too. So you can relate with the public radio folks. Is there something else? You mentioned another novel in the works now coming out in May of next year, I assume, 2016?
2016, yes, okay. Before the election. I said, please do not, I do not want a book coming out in the fall of an election year. I had, Disobedience came out in the year 2000, and on election night, I was on my book tour in Nashville, Tennessee,
sure.
And I was staying in this hotel, and it occurred to me that there were a lot of unusual people with suits and German shepherds walking around, and it was the Al Gore headquarters, 2000, the year 2000, and you will recall what happened in that election. So no one came to my reading.
On election.
But I had kind of a fun, interesting time in those 3 days in Nashville.
Oh, I bet you really did. More interesting times to be had with Jane Hamilton tonight. Chautauqua Poets and Writers brought her to Ashland. She'll be at the Ashland High School Mountain Avenue Theater at 7:30. It's been a real pleasure to have you here on the
it's
Jefferson
been
Exchange.
Very much of a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.